Well, good morning, everybody.
Good morning. Good
morning.
Oh, okay. First of all, I want to say I hope we can enjoy this day. I hope this retreat is enjoyable for you, and I really hope that the Spirit, wherever you are, is going to be able to work and speak to us today in love and enjoyment. And I think of coming here, and I think of I'm kind of standing on the shoulders of some really great teachers and mentors that have been in my life. And I just hope that that wisdom, along with the wisdom of contemplative outreach, can be transmitted today to everybody. And I want to first of all thank Kathy and Nestor. Is Nestor in here? I don't think he's in here. But I really want to thank them for inviting me and the kind words that Nestor said last night. They've been very, very supportive. I get to do this occasionally, but I don't do this professionally. So I'm kind of like one of just like a regular folk. I work in the business world, and I'm not a priest, a rabbi. I'm none of those things. I'm not a teacher. I just am a guy who about 20 years ago started this centering prayer practice. And I just, when people would ask me to do things, I just kept on saying, yes, you know, yeah, just, you know, like, well, we'll try that. You know, and that was just kind of how things evolved for me. So I really want to thank all of you for being here today, and especially Kathy and Nestor for the support. I'll give just a little bit of an overview of what I'd like to talk about today and what we can talk about. And I hope everybody kind of feels like they can participate in some way, either prayerfully, if there's a question you have, you know, be sure to either write it down and grab one of us, or even during the presentation, I would love to hear some interaction. I mean, that's fine. Most of this will be a PowerPoint presentation. We'll have 2 hours this morning, and then this afternoon, what I thought we could do is get into some small groups and talk about some of the material. I think it's kind of good to kind of like integrate some of what we've heard this morning with each other and just like, well, how does this really apply to my life and where I'm going? I think that would be helpful, maybe. The other thing I just want to say is that, you know, centering prayer has been such a gift in my life. I mean, it's been a tremendous gift. I'm really, it came along at the right time, perfectly in 1996. And I remember doing my intro workshop, just like, you know, the folks over there. I was invited to an introductory workshop. And shortly after I came and did my introductory workshop, I picked up Open Mind, Open Heart. That was suggested. And when I read Open Mind, Open Heart, I thought, well, this is nice. Some of it I could relate to. Some of it I couldn't. No big deal. But then I started the centering prayer practice. And about 6 months later, after I'd been meditating, you know, using centering prayer, I picked up Open Mind and Heart again. And I realized that every word, every sentence, every paragraph in there was packed with transformative information. And it hit me at that time that information is not transformation. You know, we can read all this stuff and we can read all this stuff, but, you know, it's the practice, it's the daily practice of centering prayer that really leads to our transformation. Now, the books can help and it gives us insights. Going to presentations such as this, going on retreats, hearing speakers, all that helps, is wonderful, but it is the daily practice that allows God to transform our lives. Thomas Keating has always said that the divine indwelling is not a static concept, but a living presence, a dynamic presence within us. So this tells me that our basic teaching of centering prayer has got to live and grow as we live and grow. Many of us have been practicing centering prayer for a long period of time. Some of us not. I mean, you know, we're all at different stages, and that's one of the things we're going to look at today is stages of our lives, the stage, where are we in our life, and how is our centering prayer adapting to the stage of our life? Is it, are we allowing centering prayer to live and grow, that dynamic divine indwelling? Are we allowing that to live and grow in us? I think of the five P's of meditation: persistence, perseverance, presence, practice, and patience. Okay? And that's what it takes to sustain a centering prayer practice over time. I'll give them to you again. And you don't have to write these down. You can ask me later. But persistence, perseverance, presence, practice, and patience. Just a little bit about my own background. I come from two transformative traditions. The first tradition, of course, is contemplative prayer as taught by Thomas Keating, the monks at Snowmass, and contemplative outreach. It's, you know, my basic practice is like everybody else's, that we, like we've been taught, which is 20 to 30 minutes of centering prayer twice a day, and that is my basic practice. I also try to do a 10-day retreat on a frequent basis, usually once a year. And I do service work with contemplative outreach, and I'm a presenter of the introductory workshop and other presentations. But I'm also a member of 12-step recovery. I'm a recovering addict and alcoholic. I've been in recovery since 1985, and that has also been a transformative experience for me. I'm on the leadership team of 12-step outreach, where we teach centering prayer and all the related practices to people in recovery, recovering alcoholics and addicts. And that has been a marvelous experience for me. The hunger of alcoholics, when they can really tap into this prayer, can really be a life-changing thing. And that's what God gave me in my gift of recovery, this gift of my 11th step, which is sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. I was given this gift of centering prayer as my 11-step practice, and it's been kind of my personal desire to be able to share the gift of centering prayer with other people in recovery, and whatever we're recovering from. Thomas Keating always says we're all recovering from the human condition. I mean, that's just, you know, we all are. But, you know, that's such a great gift. I'll say another thing, too, you know, just to kind of level set things. It took me about 4 years to really say that I had a practice of centering prayer where I could say, you know, I sat down twice a day and did my meditation. You know, when I first came, I thought, oh, this is great, you know, easy. You know, I'll just sit and I'll do my two sits a day, you know, it'll be great. But actually, it took about 4 years. I was really good with the first sit. And sometimes I'd get my second sit in, you know, but I learned I had to be creative. But every time I did something with centering prayer, every time I did something with contemplative outreach, I should say, my desire was a little stronger. My willingness was just a little bit stronger. And my commitment grew. And, you know, I kind of learned that first sit kind of maintained our spiritual growth, but that second sit was transformative. And I really started to understand that second sit was very, very, very important if I really wanted to progress on the spiritual journey. Okay. You know, and the last, you know, thing is a little bit of an introduction here is I'm going to be talking about a lot of stuff today. I'm going to be talking about the evolution of our spiritual journey, not in terms of creation versus evolution. I mean, I don't really, you know, whatever your personal beliefs are about that, that's fine. But I do believe, in my experience, that this transformation that is occurring us is ongoing. It's ongoing. That, you know, God is kind of recreating us every single day. And, you know, Thomas talks about transformative union. You know, when we do the introductory workshop, you probably remember we talk about the stages of relationship where it's acquaintanceship, friendliness, friendship, and then divine union or intimacy with God, transforming union. And I'm going to be talking about some of these higher states of consciousness today, but, you know, I'm not Thomas Keating. Of course I'm not. I'm just a regular person. What I can say about my own journey is that I've gotten glimpses. You know, I get glimpses that keep me wanting to go forward. But I love hearing Thomas and Gail and Carl, the great faculty of contemplative outreach, the great mystic teachers and the traditions that we have, and they come from such a deep and loving place where they've transcended so much of their humanness. And I'm still in the category of, like, I'm in the midst of it, you know, and I'll just be honest with you, I am still day by day trudging this journey of life, managing a career, a family, recovery, ups and downs, you know, like everything else. But this wonderful prayer has been such a gift in my life and given me and allowed me to do things I never really dreamed were possible, including standing up here talking to a bunch of strangers about centering prayer. You know, would this have happened 20 years ago? I don't think so, I can tell you. So let's talk about, these are a couple of quotes I just want to talk about. Okay. This is Juan Lorena. Some of you may know Juan. He's Mary Dwyer's husband. He's a great guy. He's a part of the faculty. When he came to St. Louis a couple years ago, he said, "We sit to understand and heal our lives and witness our stories." And I think that's one of the greatest things we can say about centering prayer. We come to understand. There's so much about this mystery of life that we don't understand. Sometimes we just sit and we just accept. And sometimes God reveals a lot to us, but we sit to understand and to heal. We sit to understand. We come to heal. We come to open ourselves up to God. We sit exactly where we are. We come. We are broken people. We've had all kinds of experiences in our life. And we sit and we just say, "God, here I am." And we open ourselves up the best we do. And our job is just to continually open ourselves up and then witness our stories. All of us have a story. We all have a story. And most of us act out of our story. You know, I'm this role, I'm that role, I've had this experience, and we tell people this is who we are. When we are in centering prayer, after we've done the centering prayer for a while, we start, instead of to live out of that story, we start to witness our story. We start to witness we are bigger than our story. We have a story, but we are not our story. We are something much greater than our story. On the journey, there are many teachings. We have to ask ourselves, what do we want, variety or do we want depth? That is a great question, because I think a lot of us who get into the spiritual journey, you know, all of a sudden we're thinking, gosh, spirituality is everything. And we start to get a little bit of this and a little bit of that and a little bit of this tradition and a little bit of that tradition. But ultimately, we have to ask ourselves, do we want all this variety? Which is good. We believe in inner spiritual dialogue. I love learning about other traditions. But do we want depth? And if we want depth, if we want that deeper healing, that transformative union that God is calling us to. God is constantly calling us to transforming union with Him. If we want that, then we will be faithful to our practice. You know, we can learn about all these other practices, and that's good because they help us grow our practice. But our practice is what the monks at Snowmass have taught us, which is 20 to 30 minutes of centering prayer twice a day. Okay. I'll get used to this. Okay. A couple other things. Some of you know Father Bill Sheehan, who's been a great mentor and teacher in my life. He comes to St. Louis on a regular basis and helps me with our 12-step centering prayer retreats, and he's been doing this since 2005. But Father Bill says that there is never a moment when we are separated from God. And I believe only a person who really has experienced that contemplative deepening can say this. There's never a moment when we are separated from God. Now, there are times we have thoughts where we feel like we're separated from God. And we've all gone through that. Thoughts separate us from God. We have that separate sense, that separate self-sense, that false self that can be a part of our experience as well. But the truth is, if we are alive, God is with us all the time. This is another quote from Father Bill. He says, "We all have emotional wounds that are warehoused in our bodies." He repeats, "The unconscious energy centers our needs for security, affection, and control. This repressed material from our unconscious has to come up and be fully integrated into our lives." And again, we are never separated from God. So we're going to talk about this stuff today. We're going to talk about, as we progress on this spiritual journey, how God is inviting us to become more and more whole by letting go of more and more of this unconscious material that we all have. And I think the thing is, and even Bill, you know, somebody who, you know, I put on way up on a hill, on a pedestal, when he says we all have emotional wounds in our lives. Every one of us does. And we all have this opportunity to heal that energy and integrate it into our lives. Okay, Donald Masters. I always have to mention, whenever I do a talk, I always have to mention Donald Masters. Donald Masters was an attorney from Denver, Colorado. And Donald was a personal friend of Thomas Keating's. He was a recovering alcoholic and Vietnam War vet who suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder and chronic pain syndrome. And Donald came to St. Louis for the first time in the year 2000, and he was all excited to teach centering prayer to our very first retreat to recovering alcoholics and addicts in St. Louis. And, you know, I didn't know this guy from Adam. You know, he was a nice-looking man, you know, in the middle years, and obviously very bright, very compassionate. And the first time I heard him talk ever, he told a little bit about his story, and he talked about how he had a war injury, a back injury from Vietnam, and how he got hooked on pain medication in his younger years, and how that pain medication eventually became an addiction, and he became a pretty low-bottom alcoholic and addict. I mean, he really, really, really struggled. But eventually he got into recovery, and eventually he got, somehow he found his way, he was living in Denver, but he found his way to St. Benedict's Monastery and had the opportunity to sit down and learn about centering prayer. And Donald was just on fire with the idea of teaching centering prayer to addicts and alcoholics. He just thought that was his mission in life. But Donald said, when he first started practicing centering prayer, he said, you know, I got the, you know, the guidelines, and I would sit in my chair, and he said, it was like a freight train hit me. He said, my body was in so much pain. He said physically it was just hard to sit. He said emotionally it was like the wounds of his lifetime. He said I could just feel everything, every hurt that he ever had. And he said I could hardly sit there. So he goes, I was back in Denver. He goes, I went back to talk to Thomas about it. He said, Thomas, how do you expect me to sit there 20 to 30 minutes? He goes, this is so painful physically and emotionally. And Thomas said, be patient. He said, eventually, he said, Thomas told him that he could use his pain as his sacred word. He could use his pain as his sacred word. And Thomas said, quite frankly, a lot of people have chronic pain. He said, as we get older, we have chronic pain. People have arthritis. People have all kinds of pains. People have emotional wounds. They have losses they're working through. And he said, just use your pain as your sacred word. And Donald's telling this group, including me, his story. And I thought, this is it. This is the guy. This is it. I trust this guy. I trust this man. I will follow him. I like what he has to say. That level of authenticity was just wonderful for me. Okay, so let's see what else I have here. Okay. A couple other things that we're going to talk about today. We've already mentioned the false self, but we're going to go through the levels of awareness. I think that'll be helpful as we go through some of this material. Some of you already know what the levels of awareness are. If you've had workshops or read some of Thomas's books, you know, he talks about the everyday stream of consciousness, the unconscious, the divine indwelling, and then the ground of our being. You know, these levels of consciousness that we're not always tuned in with, but as we practice centering prayer, our levels of consciousness of the inner room that Thomas talked about last night starts to grow. So we're going to talk about that. And there's another thing that I think will be helpful today. There's a chapter in Invitation to Love. Most of you are familiar with Thomas's second book, Invitation to Love. There's a chapter in there called The Four Consents. It's just a little chapter. It's like about five pages. But it's kind of like Thomas's theory of human growth and development. And it's really a great read, and it's like an invitation from God about becoming fully human. So we'll talk about that. And then I want to talk a little bit about evolution. I want to use a little bit of the writings of Teilhard de Chardin. Some of you may be familiar with him, maybe not everybody. I'll give you a little background on that. But he wrote a very famous book that's very dense and very hard to understand sometimes called The Divine Milieu. And I don't know if that word milieu is kind of it's a French word that kind of means it's a place or a community where things happen, just where things happen, things evolve. And he named his book The Divine Milieu. And really what Teilhard really focuses on are the stages of evolution. He developed a law that gives evolution its direction. And I think there are some great parallels to what happens in our centering prayer practice as we make our journey from acquaintanceship to transforming union. There's some great parallels between Teilhard's law of evolution and what Thomas Keating talks about, the development of the divine life within us. So, St. Francis, I cannot speak without saying something about St. Francis because, like probably most of you, he's very special in many of our lives. But I first saw the movie Brother, Sun, Sister, Moon when I was just a teenager, and it had like a profound effect on me. My background, again, is that I grew up in an alcoholic family. My father's an alcoholic. My mother had some pretty severe emotional problems, but it was a family of love, and they loved their children, and they were devoted to their children. It was just wacky, and I got some crazy ideas about growing up and who I was and a lot of caretaking roles, a lot of victim roles, and I did what a lot of kids who grow up in alcoholic families do is you say, I'm not going to do this, and then, of course, I'm in my 20s, and I'm doing it. You know, I'm doing the same thing I watched my parents do, probably even greater. The great gift in all of our lives today, we've been given this gift of recovery in our life, and today, you know, by the grace of God, I've been sober since 1986, November 16th, 1986. But what I want to say is, I saw that movie, Brother, Sun, Sister, Moon, and it was like the first time I felt like I was really exposed to what God's love really was. It was like I really felt that unconditional love of God. It was an adolescent thing. It was immature, but it struck me like a bolt of lightning. I just wasn't the same for about 3 months. Just like, wow, there is something there. And I thought, you know, I was raised a Missouri Synod Lutheran. I was, you know, the German tradition. That's where I came out of. But I thought, now how do I become a monk if I'm a German Lutheran? You know, I was like trying to figure out how can I get that spirituality. I mean, I didn't have any. I certainly wasn't going to leave my tradition. You know, it was crazy, but I knew there was something there I really wanted. And there's this great story about the life of St. Francis. And you probably know these stories much better than I do, but this one little story, Francis came from a pretty wealthy family. I mean, his father was a leading merchant. They lived in kind of a villa. You know, he was a textile, in the textile industry. And from what I understand, Francis was a little bit of a playboy in his youth. I mean, he loved to have a good time. He was a great storyteller. He could sing. He was like the life of a party. He was really the guy that everybody would want at their party because he would liven up, and he liked to drink, and he liked to, he liked his girlfriends. I mean, he was just one of these guys that everybody liked to be around. And of course, this is the Middle Ages, 12th century, and, they lived in this fabulous home, this fabulous villa, and around the town where these was a leper colony, and Francis described how, when he would see a leper, it would literally kind of like make him sick. He said he just couldn't even look at them. It would make him sick. And then, of course, Francis's story is that, there was a war, and his father bought him a beautiful coat of arms, and he went off to war, and he proved to be a pretty lousy soldier. And he goes off to war. He's got everything outfitted just beautifully, but he goes off and he gets captured and he's thrown in prison for like a year and gets deathly sick and almost dies in prison. But he's rescued from the prison and taken back to his parents' home. And while he's convalescing in his parents' home and getting his strength back, he has his religious conversion. And Francis said after his conversion, he said he was walking and he saw a leper. And he saw the leper and he spontaneously just reached out and kissed this leper. And he said, when I kissed the leper, it was sweet. It was sweet. After all those years of being afraid and just being disgusted by lepers, he kissed the leper and it was sweet. And to me, that is a vision of transformation. That is transformation. These things in each of our lives, these people who are, we have difficulty with, the family members, the ex-spouses, the difficult bosses, our own illnesses, the illnesses of our loved ones, all these things that just kind of at one point really kind of like turned us. I mean, it was like we didn't think we could live with this situation. We just hated this situation. Through centering prayer and through these transformative processes, we find that these are the very experiences that God uses to transform our lives, that God uses to become sweet. These things that we thought we could never handle all of a sudden become the things that we love the most. And that's transformation. That is what transformation is. So let's just go through our objectives for today. Boy, I tell you, I am not good at this. Okay, so we're going to renew and deepen our centering prayer practice. We're going to learn some new applications of the sacred symbols appropriate for the seasons of our lives as we grow in divine intimacy. And we're going to open up to new depths of meaning and new aspects of the practice in order to penetrate God's unconditional love. And when I say in that second bullet, the seasons of our lives, I want you to kind of be thinking about, what season of life am I in? Sometimes we're in a season of growth and change. Sometimes we're in a season of kind of like maintaining things. And this is not based on age or years of experience, but there's also what Teilhard de Chardin talks about is these periods of diminishments, our diminishments. And we can have diminishments at a very young age. We can have losses. We can have job reversals, financial reversals. We can have the loss of a spouse. But we all go through, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more in depth, what exactly diminishment is. But I want you to kind of think about, and there's, you know, also a time for growth and renewal. And then there seems to be a time when we're kind of like coasting along. So we're going to see how the sacred symbols might be a little bit more, we can have some flexibility there and use the sacred symbols at various stages of our lives. Okay. And as far as my sources for today's presentation, of course, the number one would be Thomas Keating and Contemplative Outreach, all the teachings. David Frenette's book, which I see over here, The Path of Centering Prayer, and The Divine Milieu Explained by Louis Savory. Okay. So, okay. All right. So over the years, I've heard Thomas's talk about this false self system. And, you know, I tell you, I think it's complicated, and I think you just kind of have to sit with it. And I've been sitting with it for years, and I don't still fully understand it. I think it's some of Thomas's most brilliant work, because he's bringing in all the gifts of psychology, and he's really helping us understand what really makes us human. One of the questions I had when I started to hear more about the conscious and the unconscious, I would think, well, if the unconscious causes us so much problem, why would God even invent an unconscious? Why would humans have an unconscious? And this is my explanation only, but, you know, all of us have various situations or even traumas in our lives that we're not quite ready to deal with. And if you haven't experienced that yourself, you certainly have heard of children, when you think of even children going through the war, or children losing a parent, or children, you know, having something terrible happen to them. The way God has given us a gift through the unconscious, because it's a way for us to survive. What we can't handle, we simply kind of repress. And we all have a repression mechanism. Things that are just too difficult to bear or would inhibit us too much, we kind of repress. So it's a way to keep going. It's a coping mechanism. Our unconscious, in some ways, is a coping mechanism. The problem is that we store this energy in our bodies. We store this stuff in our bodies. And if we're not conscious of it, if we don't become conscious of it and start working through it, it's gonna come out sideways. It's still there, and we've been able to function, and some of us have functioned beautifully. But if we don't somehow integrate that energy that's been pushed down, it's going to come out usually in one of two ways. One way is to have fears. You know, like, oh, and we all know these unconscious fears. We all have them. Sometimes people have a fear of heights. Sometimes people have a fear of certain people. You know, there's just, we all have fears. And then the other thing is things we think we need, i.e. addictions, things that we just think we need. So it comes out, and we don't exactly understand why we need these things, but it just comes out. That's just the nature of a human being. So what we're invited, in Thomas's work, what we're invited to do to become whole and experience this transforming union, we are invited to start dismantling these unconscious, what Thomas calls, these programs for happiness. And that's really a big part of the gift of the spiritual journey. So, the human condition is the double bind of longing for God and longing for happiness, but feeling separated or alienated from God and looking for happiness where it cannot be found. So we have these unconscious desires, this desire for security, affection, and control. And these are part of our instincts. Thomas says if we didn't have these basic instincts, we wouldn't survive. A baby wouldn't have that instinct to survive. So we all have them, and there's nothing wrong with them at all. There's nothing wrong with them. But what happens is they become exaggerated. And do we all know people who have an exaggerated desire for affection, an exaggerated desire for control? An exaggerated desire for security. I mean, can we all relate to that at some level? I mean, and what we eventually, as we progress on the spiritual journey, and we have this insight eventually that only God can fill those needs, that we can seek after this stuff all we want externally, these external symbols of security, affection, control. But really, ultimately, only God can fill that. And that is the transforming journey. That is the spiritual journey. So today, we're talking about breathing new life into our practice. Last night, we heard Thomas talk about Matthew 6:6, which is when you want to pray, go to your inner room, close the door, and pray to your Father in secret. And your Father, who sees in secret, will reward you. So we're going to look at the basic guidelines of centering prayer with kind of a fresh eye. Kathy, can you give me an idea of time, how we're doing with time?
It's 20 till 10.
Perfect.
10:05.
Great. Yeah. Okay. Great. We're right on. We're very good. So. Okay. So let me go through this again first. Okay. So Thomas is teaching on the false self system. So these are mostly our unconscious desires for affection, security, and control. It explains some of our hidden motivations, and we all have them. I mean, they're natural. They're part of being human. They're tied to our instincts for survival, and they're not necessarily bad. They're human. And what we're trying to do is understand the false self and how it helped us to survive. The false self, the unconscious, you know, it's nothing bad. It's just an opportunity. It's God's invitation to transform us and move us forward on the journey. And ultimately, I hope what we all discover is we really don't need our false self anymore. Wouldn't that be great? Okay. Okay. So breathing new practice and new life into our practice. As we go through the basics, we're going to look at them with a fresh eye, and this enriches the foundation of our practice. We're going to talk about deepening the sacred word, breath, and glance, and this infuses us with more receptivity to the unseeable mystery of God. Like I said before, using the sacred symbol in a new way may better suit the season of life you're in. And we're going to see that the joys and sufferings of the ordinary life, even business, are part of the spiritual journey. I hope when you walk away from this presentation today, you're going to see that both the ups and the downs of life are a part of it. We can count it all joy, like St. James says. They're all part of it. Okay. Okay. So I'm going to read the four guidelines of centering prayer. And I would just like you to just kind of like in a meditative state, just think about this a little bit. Choose a sacred word as the symbol of your intention to consent to God's presence and action within. The key word is intention to consent. Sitting comfortably and with eyes closed, we're closing off the outside world. Settle briefly and silently introduce the sacred word as the symbol of your consent to God's presence within. Presence and action within. You might think of that symbol as a distillation of everything you've ever wanted or yearned to say to God. That sacred symbol represents your consent to God and God's all-abiding love for you. When you become aware of thoughts, return ever so gently to the sacred word. And when we say thoughts, keep in mind we're talking about the umbrella term, which means that when we sit in centering prayer and we have physical sensations come up, chronic pain, twitching in our bodies, any feeling of uncomfortable or just a sensation of energy or tingling, that we just return ever so gently to the sacred word. That is your body relaxing. That is your nervous system letting go. And then at the end of the prayer period, remain in silence with the eyes closed for a couple of minutes. The whole instruction there is about bringing this reservoir of silence into our everyday life, that we're not going from sometimes deep, deep rest and jumping back into our life. We want it more integrated. We want to bring that inner silence, that sense of spirituality, God's vision, into every experience of our life. Okay. We say here, the heart and soul of centering prayers are intention and consent to God's presence and action within, moving us forward and transforming everything. Thomas Keating says that the awareness of the divine indwelling is a quantum leap on the spiritual journey. Okay. All right. The levels of awareness, we've talked about this a little bit already. What we're aware of, what we see, what we hear, what we sense, what we think, our thought patterns, is the ordinary awareness, what we experience every day. And then we have the psychological unconscious. Beneath that is our true self, and then we have the divine indwelling. Part of the psychological unconscious is where the unconscious programs for happiness reside. So what happens if we look at our centering prayer practice as we sit down and start to experience this deep rest that we sometimes experience in centering prayer, not always, but when we sit down in centering prayer, when we introduce the sacred word and we feel rest and peace, there is this process of unloading where the anxiety, a memory, a thought, a pattern, a vision, something comes up from the unconscious and becomes part of that purification and evacuation. And that's the process of centering prayer. And whatever comes up, we simply, the instruction is just to return ever so gently to the sacred word. And that's how it goes. Over and over and over. And like Thomas said last night in the movie, every time we work through this process, we're starting just, see if this works. Yeah. Every time we're starting out here, you know, but every time we let go through evacuation and purification, we're going just a little bit in. We're getting closer and closer to our true self and the divine indwelling. And we start to notice new patterns arising in us. We start to notice that the habitual way we respond to life, the habitual way we think about things, our own judgments about people, our own judgments about a certain family member or a difficulty that we have starts to change. And we start to notice over time that we're starting to react more from our true self and the divine indwelling than some of these external patterns that we've been reacting with all of our lives. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay, just one other thing about this, and that is St. Paul says, what is exposed to the light becomes the light. So in this process of unloading and evacuation, or what Donald Masters said when he was sitting in centering prayer and he just felt emotional pain, or he just felt physical pain, but he knew intuitively that God was healing him. And that was because he knew he was exposing it to the light. He was opening himself up to God. He just allowed himself to be, not trying to mask his pain, but open his heart up to God. And that was transforming for him. That was his transforming union. Okay. When we are first exposed to centering prayer, and you might recall this, and you still may have this, we all have residuals of all these levels of consciousness. But in our ordinary awareness, one of the first things we say, am I doing this right? Does it feel right? What's supposed to happen? What's my sacred word? What am I supposed to feel now? You know, it's all those type of questions. And that's where it starts in this. That's our ordinary level of awareness. Then we start to notice that our reactions to others are different, and people start to notice that there's something different about us. We're not responding in the same way. Our daily practice eventually affects the way we see things. That we might not be conscious of it, but we're seeing people differently. We're noticing things differently. We start to understand people's needs. We start to, instead of taking things personally, we start to realize that people are just wounded. They don't have maybe a gift of centering prayer, or they don't have a gift of recovery. It's not because they're bad people or they're trying to hurt us. It's just because they're wounded and they don't have any other way to act. We start to see a shift in the way we view people, ourselves, and God. Our understanding of life and our life is refined. We start to see with more depth and compassion. Okay, so deepening centering prayer. Let's go on. Okay. Some modern theologians say that God not only created the world in the Big Bang, but that creation is an ongoing process. Thomas Keating says God is manifesting who He is at every moment, in and through us and through all creation. Creation is continually happening materially and in less visible ways. What we're talking about here is unleashing our potential. We're talking about unleashing this God-given ontological consciousness within us that resides within each of us. I'd like to talk a little bit now about Teilhard de Chardin and his law of evolution. Teilhard de Chardin was a French Jesuit. He lived from 1888 to 1955. And what's interesting about his life is he was ahead of his time. He was a visionary, and he was a mystic. And he saw God in everything. He saw God in everything. And he was a very well-known paleontologist and geologist, and taught all over the world. But the Roman Catholic Church at that time could not accept his vision of evolution. And so all of his writings were censored, and none of his writings were published until after his death. So this man devoted his entire life to teaching mystical theology and evolution, the spiritual journey, basically, but never saw any of his works published. I mean, talk about humility, and always remained a Jesuit priest until the day he died. So he saw everything moving and connected and developed this, what he called a law of evolution. And I think this law of evolution has a lot to do with our centering prayer practice and has some applicability that I think may be helpful to you. Let me see how what you guys think about this. Okay. There are four parts to his law: attraction, connection, complexity, and consciousness. There are four parts, and they all have to be together. They're not separate. You can't take complexity out of it or connection. They're all part of the same law. And attraction is things, and beings, anything in the universe, are attracted to one another. That is a basic law, that everything is attracted to one another. You can look at relationships, you can talk about particles, but everything yearns to connect. And then the second part of the law is the connection. Everything wants to form new connections. Beings, think of oxygen and hydrogen formed together to form water, molecules of water. And once these connections are made, when these beings or atoms or anything in nature comes together and they form new connections, it becomes complex. We look at technology, we look at relationships, we look at the world of nations. But once we've made connections, things get complex, and things can be, we know that when things get complex, it's difficult. We know that in relationships. We look at any one of our friendships and look at any one of the long-standing friendships that we've had in our lives, any one of us, and we can say, you know, we love that person, they've been a friend for life, but there was this phase of this relationship that was very complex. Very, very complex. Look at a long-term marriage. You can see people who've been together for 50 or 60 years, and you can say they were committed to each other, they loved each other, and they were attracted to each other, they formed a connection, but there were times when it was very, very complex. The great news is that out of complexity comes higher states of consciousness. So Teilhard's gift to us is that things get difficult. Things get sometimes almost unbearable. But with the laws of evolution, it's pushing us forward, and we can't help it. We are going to be moved into higher states of consciousness. That's just the law of evolution. That's just how God made us. So we look at the levels of relationship. And we look at what Thomas talks about. Thomas Keating talked about, when he was talking about the stages of growth, Thomas said, acquaintanceship, friendship, friendliness, friendship, and intimacy, divine union, transforming union, which God is calling us all the time. And what Teilhard is saying is something similar. He's saying that, you know, acquaintanceship, that there's an attraction. There's an initial attraction. Beings and atoms and communities and social situations, technology, everything, you know, they're attracted to one another. They form connections. Friendliness is starting to form a connection. And then we have friendship. And at that friendship level, when things are established, things get complex. Families change. Technology changes. Social situations, environments, communities, neighborhoods change, and it causes complexity. It's difficult. People get their feelings hurt. Volcanoes happen in nature. I mean, that's part of the complexity of nature. Earthquakes happen. Huge. We have our own earthquakes and volcanoes. It happens in families. That's part of it. But that is part of our evolution. And out of that complexity comes higher states of consciousness. Higher states of consciousness, where we start to develop unconditional love. We have a vision for things that we never had before. We accept things that we've never been able to accept before. Okay? Now, this is what Teilhard says, and how much time do I have left?
About 7 minutes.
Okay. Okay. Are you guys with me?
Yes.
Is this okay?
Yes.
Okay, good stuff. Okay. Now, what Teilhard says is moving forward includes passing through some stages of instability and may take a very long time. He's not talking about doing centering prayer for 4 weeks. You know, he's not talking about that. He's talking about the long view of things. And he says, but progress may be characterized by experiencing our woundedness, and that's some of the complexity. When we are really bound with things, when new technology comes, when we have new social systems, we see all the flaws. You know, when we sit in centering prayer, we are starting to see, you know, Thomas Keating says, it's like the veil is lifted and we get to see that it's not pretty under there. You know, we have some real emotional wounds that we've been dealing with all of our lives. So we experience our woundedness. There is psychological and physical discomfort. And sometimes we even feel like we're reverting back to an earlier state. You know, like, I remember this. I remember this clearly. When I started centering prayer, I thought, you know, after about a year, I thought, well, this practice is making me depressed. You know, this practice is, I really thought centering prayer was making me depressed. What I didn't realize was centering prayer was opening me up to what needed to be healed. You know, and thank God I had wonderful teachers along the way to say, Jim, just stick with the practice. That's all you're asked to do and just see what happens. Just hang in there. Okay, now, in the last 5 minutes, and if I go over just a couple of minutes, give me him, okay? Because this is the last thing I want to talk about this morning. Because I know Kathy is really good. She told me she would be managing my time. So I appreciate it. And I really do appreciate it. Because I can get wound up in this stuff. Because I love it. Because it's meant so much to me. It's given me an understanding and a level of acceptance that I would have never gotten anyplace else. Thomas Keating, in his chapter on the Four Consents, it's his theory of human growth and development. And it's based on Erikson's stages of growth. And Thomas is talking about what is essential for us to be fully human and fully able to do God's work. It's the process of growth and development, and it's really God's invitation. This is God's invitation. So, what does Thomas say to us? Thomas says that during four stages of our life, we are asked to make four consents, four basic consents, okay? And this is what Thomas says, because of who we are and because each of us had, to one degree or another, an imperfect life, and certainly experiences before we got into contemplative prayer and all the other contemplative practices, what Thomas says is that we are given this opportunity again to consent. So what we did not consent to at an earlier stage of our development, Thomas says God is giving us an invitation to now consent again. And the four consents are: the first one we do in childhood. Every child is asked to consent to their basic goodness. Not you're good if you do this, or if you do this, you're good, or all the things that children, you guys know what children are taught. Screw it. We have a basic core of goodness in child, and that's what God is asking us to consent to, our basic core of goodness. And if you've not consented to your basic core of goodness, this spiritual journey, your centering prayer, you are asked to consent now. now to your basic core of goodness and all the potential within you. In the second stage, which is our adolescence, we are asked to consent to the energy of creativity, our sexuality, adolescence, and relationships. And if we had some wounds in our adolescence, if we were given negative messages, or if we were exposed to sexuality too early in our lives when we were really not mature enough to handle that, we're going to have some wounds, and that distorted our vision of life, that distorted who we are. And what Thomas is saying is we have to consent to the goodness of human development, of human adolescence, of human sexuality, of human creativity. And if we haven't, we're asked to do it again now. Okay? In the third consent, which happens in early adulthood, we are asked to consent to human limitations. It's usually in early adulthood when people realize that they're never going to fulfill all the dreams they had, that they're never going to live up to a set of standards that they had in their mind. They're never going to, not every young man is going to be the president, and not every young lady is going to be Madame Curie. You know, it's like everybody's got their limitations, and God is asking us to consent to that, to being who we are and the goodness of who we are. And also in that third consent, God is asking us to consent to non-being. Usually in early adulthood, a person is exposed to death on an intimate level for the first time, really, where they really understand what death is. And we are asked to consent to non-being and the goodness of this human journey, with a beginning and an end. And if we haven't consented to the goodness of our limitations and our death, in our centering prayer, in our spiritual journey, we are being asked right now to consent to that, to the goodness of being human. And in the fourth consent, and this is the big one, Thomas is asking us to let go of the false self. That is our invitation from God, to let go of the false self. And there's two ways Thomas says it. He says, we can let go by dismantling the false self system, which we do day by day as we practice centering prayer, or sometimes it just happens, we just simply let go of the false self. And I'm going to tell you, easier said than done, right? When we go back to that chart that says, you know, the everyday level of stream of consciousness, when we think of that everyday level, that those patterns of consciousness, when we think of the recovering addict alcoholic who feels like if they don't get their fix, they're going to die, because we have a lot invested in our false self. Our false self has been with us all of our life. We're used to our false self. We're used to our judgments about other people. We're used to our judgments of ourselves. It's really hard to do that, but our invitation through this spiritual journey is to let go of the false self. That is God's invitation for us. So with that, I am going to end this first session. I appreciate your attentiveness so much. I really do. I just feel the spirit in this room. It's been wonderful being with you. And I'll see you in about 45 minutes.